Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we check in on three of our latest projects, including the subwoofer build, the Pi modem, and another retro build. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain.
Sometimes we hit that dry period between releases here at the Hardware Asylum Labs. And so we tend to keep ourselves busy with other projects like the subwoofer build. But a lot of those projects get farmed out to things like YouTube. But there are also a lot of projects, and we alluded to this in 146 if you happened to catch that last little bit. A lot of these projects sit in semi-unfinished states waiting for the next slow period.
Yes. That is very true.
So I thought maybe this would be a good opportunity for us to check in on some of these projects, some unfinished, some old, and some new, and just get an idea of what we've been doing with the downtime in between major releases.
All right, then. So we have three of them that I wrote down on the board here.
All right. So three, I know there are more than that, but these are, I think, a good start. So yeah. The first one's near and dear to my heart. Let's talk about where we're at with the subwoofer builds.
Subwoofer builds. All right. So we have a video that's out on the Hardware Sound YouTube channel. It's the latest one that was released as of this particular recording. And that is of the construction and assembly of the final box. Now the box, exact same dimensions as the prototype box. So the previous videos are all, it should sound the same based off of that. But I decided to add a bit of spit and polish, some paint, some stain, some clear coat. You know, we're trying to make it look good.
Pretty it up. So it looks like a commercial product and not a prototype. That makes sense.
Exactly. And that is basically done to the point where I've had to repaint it twice. I'll probably do it one more time just to get that finish exactly the way that I want. But we have electronics to install. We have subwoofers to install. And I added a lot of trim dress-up pieces, so to speak.
The lipstick, if you will.
Lipstick, not necessarily on the pick, but we're looking to add that little extra bit of pizzazz. So, for instance, around the subwoofers, which are downward facing, so you really won't be able to see it, except in pictures. I have some trim rings that I am 3D printing around that, and I can print those in any color I want. I mean, I can make them black to blend in with the box itself. Or I could do white for the ultra contrast, or what I've decided to do is orange. So it's going to have these orange trim rings, match the Hardware Asylum colors, and that is also matching the 3D printed pieces that I designed for holding the amplifiers. So in the back of that box, there is a cutout, the area behind the motherboard, so to speak.
It's like behind the curtain.
Yeah, so that is where the amplifiers are going to be placed. They'll have at least one of them in there to drive the subwoofers. There might be another one added for stereo and center channel. It has its own built-in power supply. So there's going to be a power plug that plugs directly into it that will power the amplifiers. And then we will have various knobs and RCA ins and outs and some other fancy stuff to control the woofer.
Sometimes I think you're just looking for an excuse to solder. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, there is. And in this case, Darren hit it right on the head, because to put all of this together, there's going to be a fair amount of soldering. For instance, the speaker wires on the prototype, what I found was that if I use the crimp blade connectors that would connect the speaker wire to the subwoofer themselves, those came loose all the time. I don't know if it was the type of wire or not using enough crimping pressure, even though they were almost flat. So obviously it wasn't that. I had to solder those on to make sure that they would stay. So I'll be doing that again, obviously.
Well, I can tell you, I've been using the prototype for, it seems like a couple of months now.
Yeah, I let you borrow it.
And I have connected that to the latest Creative external sound blaster, the, what is it, AE5.
No, it's the X5.
Oh, that's right, the X5.
Yeah, it replaces the X7, which was near and dear to your heart, and unfortunately...
Oh, it died. And they're not currently making a replacement. Mm-hmm. And I loved that because it had one of my favorite features in an external sound device, the ability to switch back and forth between my speakers and my headphones on the fly. So if I want to listen to some music, I can listen to it, fill the room with my speakers. I've even got the subwoofer booming, right?
Yeah.
Or if I need to play some games while somebody's sleeping or working, or just, you know, want that surround sound headphone for communication, mm-hmm. I can at the flip of a switch. But the subwoofer sits nicely under the desk. Now, it's not as pretty as yours.
Yeah, we'll have to work on that in the future, I think.
But it is running those creative speakers that we reviewed way back when with the X7.
Yeah, the Muse, I forget the sub-brand, but I will put a link to all of these things down in the show notes, mm-hmm. so be sure to check it out on hardwaresom.com.
And I can tell you that it sounds phenomenal. In fact, it sounds better than when I had my Paradyne 6-inch subwoofer there.
Well, that is probably the best pat on the back I've gotten this week.
So if you're out there and you're considering it, you can. But I want to kind of revisit because my setup is a little bit different. So I know my amplifier in that prototype that I'm using.
Yeah, it's a Lipia.
Is a Lipia. And it's, a, if I'm not mistaken, it's a 2.1, right? So it doesn't have the surround sound options. Doesn't require an external power supply even, does it?
It does require external power supply. So the difference between that plate amplifier and the amplifiers I'm using in the final build, the plate amplifier was all self-contained. So you are correct. It was 2.1, it supported 2.1 channel sound, and it had power input switches and then a couple of dials to tune the crossover frequency and the bass volume. And by making a switch, you could say, this is just a subwoofer amplifier, or this is just a 2.1 setup. And then when you hook up the wires on the amplifier itself, those were dedicated to how you wanted to run the amplifier. So in the prototype, it was basically running the subwoofers in series where an 8-ohm load goes into the plate amplifier, and then we configured it to just do subwoofer output. Now, you had outputs on that that would allow you to do line out or powered out to other speakers, which is why we were able to hook up those creative monitors in your particular setup. That's different than from what I'm doing in the final build because I have a dedicated just an amplifier. It has a DSP so I can control crossover frequencies with an external device, but it doesn't have any way to output that audio. So I'm going to need to acquire a signal processor that will take an optical or line in and then split those signals up to go to dedicated amplifiers. It's kind of a different way of thinking about it, and it kind of goes back to the way we used to build car audio back in the day.
Oh yeah, right.
So we would have our head unit and then we have our signal processors, and those would go to dedicated amplifiers for dedicated purposes. So we would have one for maybe the front center channel. I had an amp for that. And then you would have another amp for mids and highs in the cabin, and then you have a dedicated subwoofer amplifier. Well, that's how this is going to be set up. So I have to hook up a signal processor, which I don't have yet, and that's where those two amplifiers I talked about in the final build will come into play, so that I can hook creative monitors or ones I'm going to build myself directly up to this subwoofer box.
Well, it certainly sounds like a ton more power.
Well, yeah, it's going to have... Well, let's see, the difference here is that Leapy amplifier, I think, was just 30 watts at 8 ohm, and it was only 8 ohm stable or 6 ohm stable, something like that. It was not very powerful. Now, the amplifiers that I'm putting into the final build, it is a 100 watt monoblock at 2 ohm. So instead of wiring these subwoofers in series, I'm going to run them in parallel to drop it down to 2 ohms. That's how I'll get those 100 watts. I'll just have to dial back the gain so that I don't blow them up.
Same subwoofers though, same speakers.
Yeah, same woofers. We're using the Tang Band 5 1/4 inch subwoofer. I wanted to go with a larger size, maybe for the prototype, but when I compared the specs, the 5 1/4 was actually better.
Well, very interesting. That just means you made a good selection. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it because already, to me, it looks like a commercial audio product. It's not even finished. Yeah. I know you're printing some legs for it, and the finish looks great, like a classic piano black home theater piece.
Oh, yeah. That's. I should talk about that a little bit because in the final video, I talk about how I did. I put down some wood veneer. And this is the first time I've ever done wood veneer. And it's actually easier than you think. It's contact cement, stick it on there just like a sticker. It just happens to be made out of wood. And then much like with any high quality wood product, you need to do your prep work up front. And that's where I was a little lacking when I was putting it together the first time. So I ended up staining it black and then painting the front panel black as well. But I wanted the texture. I wanted the wood texture and the wood stain. And when you do stain, you actually see some of the wood tones be through the stain. It's not like painting it. So I wanted to have that contrast and then a flat black front panel where the port's going to be. Well, I had issues with the clear coat, so I sanded it all back again.
Oh, no.
And ironically, when I sanded it all back, I was able to take care of some of the issues that I had in the finish before and was able to restain it. And I have a much more beautiful and more even coating of stain this time around to give me even that more depth, which is kind of cool. And it, unfortunately, it doesn't translate into photos very well. So I guess if you want to see it, you'll have to come by the lab or something.
Come by the labs. But definitely more video to come on that as we continue with the subwoofer project. Yeah. And I'm a little jealous. I might have to paint mine as well since mine still looks like the bare boards.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing that I told you that you could do. Once we get this one done, we can decide, hey, what do we want to do with the fit and finish on the prototype? And not necessarily rebuild it. I mean, maybe it comes down to that, but obviously we have some extra laminate, we have stain, we have paints. We could do just about anything.
Excellent. So lots more to come on the subwoofer build as we move from a traditional subwoofer like the prototype into what sounds like a pretty rockin' 5.1 surround sound home theater style system.
Yeah, for a retro PC of all things.
Well, you know what? If you're gonna do it right.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the other project that has been going on. Let's talk about the modem.
Oh yeah, the Supra Pi modem project.
It's like a stealth retro mod, I think, is maybe how I would look at it.
Yeah, I keep calling it a retro internet appliance.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the idea behind the Supra Pi modem was to, one, allow retro computers using period correct software get onto the modern web. Easier said than done, but ideally be able to dial out to modems using terminal software that we all were familiar with back in the 90s. And you can't do that with modern tools. So you need to have something in between this little buffer. And that's what this Pi modem is. So we're using a Raspberry Pi device or a single board computer with some software to make that translation between a serial port connection and Wi-Fi or Ethernet. That particular video that I posted has done extremely well on the Hardware Asylum YouTube channel. I'll put a link down in the show notes, obviously. Now, I had one issue, and that was with Wi-Fi, unfortunately.
Well, that's because of the metal shell, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It was. And I knew that going in that was going to be a problem. It's basically an electronic emitter inside a Faraday cage. It's going to block the signal. I figured with the plastic ends, and if I put the antenna close to one of those plastic pieces, I would get enough signal out that it would work. In this case, it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, no. And I think we talked about maybe put an external antenna on it, but you had some options you wanted to explore. Where did you end up going?
Well, I'm going to install a USB output. So on those single board computers, we'll call the Raspberry Pi Zero.
Okay.
So that is a very small board. That's basically the same kind of board that I put into the Pi modem. It has two USB ports. One of the USB ports is primarily for power.
Yeah.
That's how you power the device. The other one is data, and it works like any other USB. So you can plug in a mouse or a keyboard or a modem or... Well, not a modem, but...
modem into a modem.
Modem into a modem. a Wi-Fi, for instance.
Sure.
A lot of those boards have Wi-Fi on board, which is why I added that antenna and everything. Well, I need to move this outside of that container. And it turns out that USB 2.0 is four wires.
Okay.
Two wires. You have power and ground. And then the other two wires are data send, data receive.
Makes sense.
And... USB-C adds four more wires for redundancy and extra awesomeness. But with USB 2, which is what the Banana Pi, which is in the Pi modem, uses, I can route that out to outside to a USB port. Now, I want to keep with the stealth look of the Raspberry Pi modem. And as you know, RJ11, the plug, has four wires.
Yes, it does. Well, I think I see where this is going.
Yeah. So I have all those plugs that I removed off of the board and a spot on that modem where I can put those plugs. So what I'm going to do is make a special cable that plugs into the micro USB on the Banana Pi, route that to the four wires on the RJ11 plug or the socket, and then create a special dongle, which is a phone cable that goes to a female USB that I'll be able to plug in a Wi-Fi module into, and that will be my external antenna. The operating system on the Banana Pi will then, you know, basically activate that device, and that gets me that antenna outside of the modem and then still keeps the stealth look of the modem itself.
Well, that's definitely an interesting solution. It seems like it's a lot of work, though, to convert and convert and convert.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of like that old adage where, you know, you can, there's adapters for everything.
Right.
You know, you can go from what, PS2 to USB to somehow make it into, you know, HDMI or something, right? Well, it's never really guaranteed to work because you've converted way too much stuff.
Yeah, you're going to lose some signal something.
Yeah, well, and that is really, that's my first stab at it. And I'm pretty sure it'll work great. And the idea there is that I wanted to keep the stealth look of the modem project itself. That was, you know, why I didn't want to put an external antenna sticking out the back or modify any of the stock plastic pieces. Well, my next video after this one, because these are all videos that I have planned, is to replace the board, the Banana Pi in there, with an upgraded board. It's Redaxia, I think is what it's called. It's a Rock Pi brand.
The Rock Pi.
Yeah, they're all...
The Banana Pi.
Or Bango Pi. They all have pies. But the idea is that it's the same form factor, but it supports USB-C as the plugs on there. So it has USB 3.0, lots more throughput and whatnot. So for the next video, I'm going to replace the Banana Pi with that Redaxia board and then take a USB-C connection to a USB 3 plug. And I'm going to put that plug in there instead of that RJ11 so that I can plug in a USB hub.
Right.
So now at this point, I'll be able to have more USB devices hooked into the Pi modem. So I can have a USB Ethernet, a USB Wi-Fi, USB storage. I can add just about any device I want, including like keyboard and mouse.
Oh, wow.
So that's where this internet appliance comes into play, because now I'll have storage and then I can have, you know, for instance, a BBS running on there. I can have a file server running on there. So when I hook in any of my retro PCs, I can pull down all the files, games, whatever I need off of that modem and remove it from my local area network. Everything is self-contained.
Pretty cool. I did notice one small problem with both of the projects we've talked about.
And what's that?
There's no RGB, Dennis.
Oh, no. No RGB. and it's not for the lack of trying. There is lights on the Super Pi modem, which is going to be another video, and that's to hook up the activity lights on the front and also the two-digit display, which in the video I just said, make it say okay, because you can just type in two letters. Well, that is an entire program and modifying some existing software to make it display the way that I want. And that's really kind of a programming project. I'm not sure if anyone would be interested to see that in YouTube, but, you know, leave a comment down below. Let me know.
There you go. Somebody out there might need it.
Or might want it.
That's true. Well, I know that that's not the only project you've got out there, but I think the other one takes us even further back.
Yes, a little bit. So there were two retro PCs that I put together. There was the classic case build, and that was an entire YouTube series of me doing some RetroBrite on an old 386, cleaning up the case, and then dropping in an upgraded 386, put in an MFM or RLL hard drive. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like a period correct, but massively upgraded 386.
It's like a sleeper 386.
Something like that. And it makes a lot of noise. It's pretty awesome. It's sitting in the corner right now. And the other one I put together was the scam case. And that was a long story. So that was where I bought this computer. But then in the end, you know, it showed up damaged. And the person that sold it labeled me as a scammer. So I was like, well, now this is the scam case. So I ended up having to replace the front panel, replace the parts that were broken, and I put in an old Pentium motherboard that I had. And I never could get the serial ports to work on it. It had onboard serial and onboard parallel, but every time I plugged in one of the adapters, I could never get a mouse to be detected, couldn't get anything to work. So I had to install another I/O device to get, you know, a serial mouse to activate on that computer. And it turns out that that particular motherboard had a lot of aftermarket BIOS support. So I was messing around with different BIOS and firmwares and trying to flash them on there and flash them off there. Well, there's one problem with old retro hardware like this. They only have one BIOS chip.
Oh, yeah. And it's not usually removable, is it?
Nope. You can't take it off. It's soldered on the board. And technically, they have a limited amount of writes to it. So if you write to the BIOS over and over and over again, then you'll brick the board and won't be able to ever use it again. Well, in this case, I put a firmware on there that was not completely supported.
Oh, no.
And I bricked the board.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. So it wasn't me like over flashing. It was me putting the wrong firmware on there and just kind of forcing it to install.
And it doesn't have recovery?
Nope. Well, yes and no. So the recovery on it is with a special disk that you put into the floppy drive, and then you boot it up and it's supposed to go to that disk and then do some stuff. Well, there was an entire recovery method that was documented in the, it's an Intel board, in the manual. So I followed that. It did not work at all.
Oh, no.
And then it's like, well, one last ditch effort. I tried putting two of them together. So I had one disk that had the firmware on it that I needed, and then I had the recovery disk. So I booted up off the recovery disk and then swapped it to put in the BIOS file that I needed to have.
Right.
And then it flashed just fine, and I had a working motherboard again.
Yay.
But that was after I took the whole computer apart to, you know, mess with it and stuff.
Oh, no, so much time.
Yeah, so I ended up putting everything in the scam case back in its box and the chassis sitting under the bench waiting for the next build to go into it, which is not what we were going to talk about, but that was kind of a little side story.
Fair enough.
So the next project is the Prima build, and I did one video on that already, and that's where I cleaned up another mini tower chassis in kind of this classic format with the intention that it was going to have a Pentium 2 build into it. It's going to have a Pentium 2 build. And I have a variety of Pentium 2 motherboards that were all baby AT form factor. Now, as some of you probably have no idea about, when Pentium 2 came out, there was a shift in form factor for motherboards. We were shifting from baby AT, which had that one large DIN socket for the keyboard, to ATX, which is the form factor that we're all familiar with that has spots where you have keyboard and mouse, you have serial parallel ports, you have audio, right. And the board is much taller to accommodate more expansion slots, accommodate much larger processors like the Pentium 2, bigger power supplies, everything. Well, turns out that for reverse compatibility, some motherboard manufacturers were releasing Pentium 2 in baby AT form factor. And I came across four boards. And in this next video, I'm going to be talking about the performance of each one of those boards and picking one to go into the Prima build.
Oh, it's nice to have options though.
Yeah. And I have five different processors that I tested across all these different boards. Some of the boards didn't support all the processors, and some of the motherboards had extra features enabled that enabled higher performance. Some of them look like they had better performance, but they actually didn't.
Oh, no.
So I kind of went back to my old days of motherboard reviewing from, you know, not modern, but classic motherboards, and just doing basic performance tests and performance tweaks. And that's what's really going to be the center point of that particular video. It's like, well, this is the performance. This is what was supported, what was not. Here's the board I'm going to put into that build because of blah. And then kind of put it all together, and that will replace the scam case.
Very interesting. And then even more retro gaming will be possible.
Yes, because we have the more powerful Pentium 2 platform, which in terms of retro hardware, unless you are looking for a specific DOS game, the Pentium 2 is probably as far back as you want to go. Because at that point, you can still run, you know, Windows 2000 some cases Windows XP on it, which gives you a lot more options for what kind of games you can play. You can put in Voodoo cards, you can put in GeForce 2 Ultras, anything in the AGP realm. It gives you a lot of options and a lot of performance. Now, anything past that into like the Core and the Pentium 2, the Core and the Pentium 4, stuff like that, you don't need to have a retro computer to play those kind of games. You can play it on a modern PC. So at this point, you're right in the middle of where you can play old DOS games and you can play semi-modern shooters like Battlefield 1942.
Yay. Any particular game that we should be looking forward to?
That's a good question. I am really wanting to revisit Unreal.
Oh, way back. The original Unreal.
The original Unreal and then Unreal 2 and then go into the Unreal tournaments.
Ah, I have fond memories there.
And I also want to do a Quake series. So I want to do the original Quake plus the mission packs. And since I'll have a machine with a Voodoo 2 card in it, I should be able to kind of do it as kind of like a stream series. So I can kind of play through the games and, you know, maybe we'll do an online thing on Twitch, or maybe it'll be a combo thing where Darren and I are just talking as we're going through the game. And then once Quake is done, we have the similar situation with Quake 2 and several mission packs. So that will encompass that machine with some period correct hardware, and we'll be able to play one of the classic games that really started the first person explosion.
Excellent. Well, definitely looking forward to it. Three builds in progress, one teaser. I kind of like it.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot more to come. I mean, the whole reason that I'm doing a lot of this retro stuff is to explore old builds, but then also put together systems that I really wanted to build back in the day. So, for instance, I restored a dot matrix printer, and I have several, you know, period correct computers. I want to put together a network where I have a way to print to that printer from a 386 and also a Pentium 2, and then be able to play an actual LAN party game on a Pentium 2 and a Pentium machine, you know?
Right.
Not necessarily as kind of the next wave in computer gaming, but more of a way to revisit games the way that they're supposed to be played.
Well, I think a lot of these retro games are getting hot again because they're starting to show up on the phone. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of excited to see a chance to maybe play some of those old LAN games again. How fun is that?
Yeah, well, maybe we could do like a Doom 2 series. That's something that I never really played anything but like the first episode of the shareware, because I never bought Doom 2. But Doom and Doom 2 are really super popular in the retro world in terms of, you know, this is the classic first-person shooter. You couldn't look up and down, but there's a lot of community support, and there's other ports that will allow you to run it on a modern computer. But, you know, if I'm putting together an old Pentium build, I'm going to play Pentium-era computer games on it.
Well, hopefully we can track those down and get some really great videos out for you guys.
Yeah. And, if, you know, if you have any ideas, leave them in the show notes or email us at hardwarezone.com. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2023. Thanks for listening.